What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To get the most up-to-date info, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Enjoy.
Welcome, everybody, to the most recent episode here of the Oregon Coaches Basketball podcast. I'm Eddie Townsend, board member of the OBCA and boys assistant coach over at Newport High School. Today I'm joined by Jabron Jones, head coach at Baker High School. Coach, how are you?
I'm great, man. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invite. And just excited to be here and talk a little bit.
Yeah, no problem. So, Coach, you know, you're obviously the coach at the head coach at Baker High School. You know, I got to come down to the 4A tournament this year, and I was pleasantly surprised to see the way that you guys play, and I think you're, you know, doing great things at Baker. But for those that aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and how you ended up as the head coach at Baker High School.
Yeah, more than happy to share. I grew up in San Jose, California. Had a chance to play high school basketball. Had a chance to play junior college basketball back home, and finished my playing career at Eastern Oregon University in La Grande, Oregon. Shortly after playing, had a chance to coach at Eastern for a couple of years. Had the JV boys team for a year, assistant coach. Varsity for 2 years. Took some time away. Got back into it in La Grande. Had a chance to coach the girls, actually, for a couple of years as well, high school. And then took some more time away, started having kids, and my wife is from Baker City, and started coaching my kids, little travel teams, and then that led to me coming on at Baker High School. So this is my fourth year at Baker. I just finished my fourth year, and a long journey to get to where we're at now, but it's a pleasant journey for sure.
Yeah, so when you started coaching your sons doing the travel circuit, how old were they? What grade did you start at?
They were third or fourth grade. We started playing a little travel ball. And so all those kids.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was about to say, all those kids that were on that team, for those who continue to play basketball, they're now in high school, so have a chance to coach those guys, which makes it that much more sweet, just, you know, remembering, you know, having them at an early age. Now they're young men becoming men at the high school level, so it's actually pretty cool.
That's great. So when you're coaching them, you know, third, fourth grade and on, and obviously your sons are a part of it. And where are you guys traveling to? Because, you know, over here on the, you know, I'm on the beach, so we're going, you know, Salem, Eugene, those areas. Where are you normally going?
There's a lot of tournaments over here in Nampa, Idaho. It's about 2 hours from us. We went to Portland every President's Day. They had a big tournament over there. We never went to Seattle. Went to Hermiston quite a bit. I actually went to Arizona this last spring. So we basically stayed in the Northwest just because, you know, it costs a lot of money to travel. We're not rich. You know, we're not a sponsor team. Just a bunch of small town kids who love to play basketball.
Most definitely. Definitely. So let's take you to this year. Obviously, I mean, you know, when we're on the, and our league is really tough in the 4A's. Obviously, we had three teams at the state tournament. And, you know, to get to the state tournament's a big deal. And you guys are over on the east side. You're battling out with La Grande. Just walk us through a little bit of your season this year. I mean, you guys went 19-8, finished the season as the number 7 ranked team in the state. And, you know, You beat a team in Sisters, and then you had to, I mean, that, you know, it's kind of a good warm-up game. And then you had to go into Gladstone, and, you know, maybe some people didn't expect you to win that. You go into Gladstone, you beat them. You beat them real bad. And then you go to the state tournament, and in the first round, I mean, I was at that game against the number one ranked Junction City. I thought you guys had the game in hand, really, in the first quarter. You're up, I think it was 13-4 or 14-3, and you guys are rolling. Had a pretty bad injury there to look. I don't know how the kid looked like. He might have been one of your best players, and the game kind of changed at that point. But walk us through your season and, you know, up to that point where you guys, it looks like you might, you know, have a good opportunity to go into the semifinals.
Yeah, I want to give
it. And let me say, you. I mean, am I right to say that you're starting all freshmen and sophomores?
Yes, we did this year. I started end of the year, three freshmen, two sophomores. But, yeah, just I'm going to give a big shout-out to our athletic director, Buell Gonzalez. He made our schedule as tough as possible. And you mentioned earlier, you know, we came in ranked number 7. I think that's due to the teams we played. We didn't have a cupcake schedule. You know, playing over here on the east side of Oregon, it's tough to get good competition. It's tough to get good games. Just because people don't want to travel to, you know, Eastern Oregon in the wintertime. The weather's real bad. But no, we start off the season playing a couple Idaho schools, you know, Homedale and Fruitland, a home and home. Two tough teams. They did pretty well in their league over there in Idaho. We played Banks, you know, even though they were minus one of their main guys. That was a big eye-opener for us, just to see what teams on the west side look like and play like. And that was a good gauge for us. Yeah, we had a great, great preseason. We won a lot of games, played some tough games. You know, we won some games we probably shouldn't have, but that just goes to the resiliency of our guys. And then we come, you know, more towards December, January. You mentioned LeGrand. LeGrand was a tough series for us this year. We lost to them twice. We beat them once. And that was a good opportunity just to see what a rivalry game looks like. Because our team was so young throughout the year, they had to really be on their A game all year long. But all that preseason stuff and all the league games, conference games, helped us, you know, for the play-in game. We've had to play sisters at our place. That was a good game. And then, like you mentioned, we went to Gladstone, and the kids were fired up to play at Gladstone because they're all over social media watching the Oregon Predicts and all that stuff. I don't know what it is. And, yeah. You know, we went in there and played a great game. And like you mentioned, played Junction City. It was a great, great game. We just ran out of gas. But, no, it was just a good eye-opening experience to make it to the state tournament, see what's out there, and hopefully my guys will be hungry in the offseason to get back there next year.
Yeah, and so when you're, you know, you come off a season like that and you're, you know, gearing up for, you know, probably one of the most important off seasons. I mean, if I was to predict, I'd say, you know, you guys in the next few years are going to be one of the, you're going to be one of the toughest outs in the state. What are some things that you're going to have to work on or you focus on in the off season to really get your guys to the next level?
We have to be a lot tougher, offensively and defensively. We are not going to be tall next couple of years, so we have to outwork everybody all 32 minutes. And so we have to hit the weights a lot harder, and we have to get a lot quicker. We have to develop some guys to come off the bench and play their part when their time is called. So we just need an overall hungry attitude across the board. Starts, you know, from the coaching staff down to the players, and we'll see what happens come summer ball, man.
I hear you. So, you know, as a coach, you know, there's some things that I always want to be really good at, you know, I want to be known for in my programs. What are some of the best things that you feel like, you know, these are the foundations of my program, you know, as a coach and as a program? What are some of the things that you really hang your hat on?
I believe we have a good, strong work ethic. We practice at 5:30 in the morning for a reason, just to see who's really with it or not. You know, there's all kind of excuses why you can't come to practice, especially that early in the morning. So I'm trying to weed out the dudes who don't want to be there. And so I think we work hard.
Wait, so you practice at 5:30 in the morning every single day?
Every practice we have at 5:30 in the morning. Yes, indeed.
That is awesome. I love that.
Yeah. And no,
okay.
And it's the hardest part for the first couple of weeks is getting the dudes there, you know, without having a bedhead, without having crusties in their eyes. But after the first couple of weeks, they're used to it, and they have the rest of their night to do their homework, you know, hang out with their little girlfriends and, you know, watch a little TV and just relax.
It's actually a great idea. I mean, you know, at the beginning of every season, I try to do daily doubles, you know, where it's, you know, we go early morning, like 5:36, and then we do it again at night for the first week. But it really is a great idea to just carry that, because then you're not battling, you know, everybody else for the gym, and then you get the whole evening, and then you're not really worried about, I mean, no, they're not going to be out doing anything stupid if they have
exactly.
to be at practice at 5:30 in the morning. It's a genius idea.
No, that's real. No, because like you said, we practice early, so they'll be tired at night, so they have to get to bed early.
Right. So when it comes to, let's say, your defensive philosophy, are you kind of are you a zone guy? We're gonna be up in you, you know, zone press? Are you a man guy, or are you full court man? Like, what do you hang your hat on when it comes to, you know, your defensive philosophy?
This last year, we tried to force the tempo quite a bit. So we picked up full court a good chunk of the game for all the games this year, try to force the tempo. And so looking forward, you know, we got to do a lot better job of just being tougher in the full court, being tougher in the half court. We did play some man, some zone this year. And so we don't really just do one thing. It just depends on the game situation. You know, if they're making a run, we got to switch it up. If we're seeing a mismatch, we got to, you know, attack that mismatch on the defensive end. So just a matter of who we're playing, the game scenario, game situation. But I do like to force the tempo. I like to have more possessions than the other team. That way we can score more points for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great philosophy, especially at the 4A level. You've got a lot of coaches that have been doing it for a long time, and they like to, you know, they like to slow it down and kind of control the game in that way. And when you maximize possessions, I mean, it's going to come down to, one, who's in control of that pace, you know, who's used to that pace. A lot of teams can't run at that pace. And then, you know, I mean, you guys seem to be like, I don't know for sure, but it seemed like you guys had probably a pretty good three-point percentage, you know, and you wear teams out, you get more shots. All of a sudden, you know, that point disparity can really stack up for you.
Yeah, for sure. No, I got a lot of dudes who can do a lot of things on the offensive end. Like we talked about earlier, I have to get those same guys to do a lot more on the defensive end too. That'll limit, you know, their point production, the other teams, and that'll increase ours as well. It allows us a chance to get more easy, just a whole lot easier buckets.
So you mentioned that you had previously coached girls basketball. Tell us a little bit about how that has impacted your coaching as a boys basketball coach. And also, what are some things that you learned as a girls basketball coach that kind of might help you, you know, or help others that, you know, have never experienced that?
Yeah, I would say the key word is patience. You know, coaching females is a whole nother ball game than coaching dudes. And so I think I learned patience. Because as a former player, you want things done correctly the first time. But with any, you know, young group, whether it's dudes or girls, you got to have patience. And so throughout my coaching career, I think I've done a lot better job becoming patient over the years, just realizing these girls and these dudes aren't purposely making mistakes. They just need more reps. They just need more practice. Just need more confidence.
Right.
But, yeah, coaching girls is a whole nother ball game. You're dealing with a lot more of the mental mind frame in regards to emotions. You know, that kind of helped me, you know, delve into the player's mind at the high school level dealing with boys as well. They're real emotional. They just highs are just a little bit better than girls. So
That's interesting. So one other question I had for you is, I mean, obviously you've had a lot of playing experience. Sounds like you have a plethora of different opportunities of playing and coaching basketball. What would you say is a piece of advice you've received or you've learned on your basketball journey that, you know, you'd feel like willing to share with the audience?
Probably the biggest thing I learned was from my junior college coach. He consistently asked myself and the other dudes on the team, what's your plan for after you're done playing? Because, you know, I'm 44 years old. I don't play as much as I used to. And once I get 50, I definitely ain't going to be playing as much. So you got to figure out what you're going to do after you're done playing. Because everybody wants to play as long as they can, but you can't play forever. So you got to figure out what you're going to do in regards to college. If you don't have a chance to play in college, what's your plan for school? You know, if you do have a chance to play in college, what's your plan for after you're done playing? Because a lot of kids hanging their hat on trying to play in the NBA, that's few and far between. That's a great goal to have. But even the NBA dudes have a plan for after they're done playing. So he just emphasized to us, you know, what's your plan for after you're done? Because, honestly, no one can play forever.
Right. Right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with Coach Jones right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for Summer League and the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your membership with the OBCA. Membership includes access to resources and mentorship from coaches across the state and the country, as well as access to Lucio technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Eddie Townsend here with Baker Boys Basketball Coach Jabron Jones. Coach, we got a little bit of your history. We got a little bit of your philosophy. Let's go into, I wanted to ask about some of the issues going on with basketball right now on a couple different levels. We're looking at college basketball. You know, I want to know, did you watch much of the tournament last week and the last 3 weeks before that?
Yes, I watched as many games as possible. Like we mentioned, during a commercial break, I have a chance to work from home. So I was glued in watching all the games, all the channels, all the analysis. This is the best time of the year for me. Just watching hoops all day.
So I always like to tie together, you know, a tournament and kind of put a bow on it. When you're watching the tournament this year, I mean, it seemed like as the years progress, there's more and more parity as we go, you know, and I don't know, I've got my own theories of why that is, but, you know, we had a lot of upsets. We saw 15 beat a 2. We saw, you know, an A seed go all the way to the title game, you know, and North Carolina. You know, we saw a lot of different things. What are some things that you pulled out of watching the tournament this year and maybe some things that made you think of some changes you might make to your coaching as you watched it?
Watching a tournament, I was excited watching every single game because there was no clear-cut dominant team throughout the season and throughout the tournament. Just like you mentioned, Carolina made it to the chip. No one except the people in Carolina have them even making it out of the 16. So it just reinforced that if you have good guards and your team plays great overall defense, you have a chance to be in any game. And so Kansas had great guards. They played tremendous defense. And obviously they won the chip. So it just reinforced the fact of stuff that we got to do in off season. Get a lot better, a lot tougher, play a lot better D, and anything is possible in a game of basketball.
So when you're watching games like that, I mean, what are some of the things that you love the most when you're watching college basketball?
I just love the passion the dudes are playing with. Because if you take a look at Kansas, they didn't have any one-and-dones. You know, most of those guys were upperclassmen, sophomores, juniors. Probably the most important player this year for Kansas was Remy Martin, the dude who came from Arizona State, a graduate transfer.
Right.
And so that goes to show that you got to have great upperclass leadership to hold down the fort when times get tough. And I think that separated them from Carolina. And they had a lot more experience out there. And, you know, for us, going into next year, we got a lot more experience than we did have this last year. That's only going to help us in the long run, for sure.
So as I'm watching the tournament, I'm watching and I'm seeing, like, a lot of guys, they take good shots, and a lot of guys, they take bad shots. When I go back to your coaching style and, you know, teaching your guys, would you say that your players have, you know, a good idea of what a good shot is according to their coach? And how do you define that?
I give a lot of my players a whole lot of freedom to differentiate a good shot and a bad shot. I don't mind if they take a bad shot if they're playing D. And so I think a lot of young people get confused in regards to what a good shot and bad shot is. So with me, I just need to play good D, and you have a lot more leeway than the person who doesn't play great defense. And so I just need everybody on the squad to buy into the fact that playing defense wins championships, no matter how good you can shoot or how bad you shoot that particular ball game. You can always be in games when you play defense.
And so another concept that we see, and we talked about this with the tournament, is, you know, and it's not really this way in the NBA, is that, you know, we can, and on any given night, anybody can beat you, you know, and that's the best part of the NCAA tournament. It's the best part of the state tournament, too. Do you truly believe that on any given night, you know, a team can beat you, or are there times where it's like, there's really no way this team could beat us?
There are some games you go into knowing dang well that team has no chance of beating you, unless, you know, all 10 of your guys get hurt or come down with some disease before the game. That's just
right.
Reality from a coach, you know, perspective, from a player's perspective as well. But as a coach, you have to instill to the kids, hey, any team can beat you. But sometimes the kids know that ain't true, and for sure the coaches know that ain't true. So there's definitely a fine line, for sure.
So when you're playing a team that you know you're going to beat them, I mean, you know, there's a lot of – I've seen teams, they work on their stuff, or there's other teams they just kind of, you know, put it to those teams as best they can. I mean, what is your philosophy when you are playing a team that just you're going to outclass athletically and just skill-wise?
The motto is just play harder than the other team. No matter what the score is, no matter who you're playing, if you're up 30, you still play as if the game is a close game. It's a 1 or 2 point ball game. Because once you let up, that's how people get hurt, and that's how you develop bad habits. So that's the fine line a coach has to deal with, is just getting the guys to play hard no matter what the score is.
Right. And so you're in your league, I mean – You guys kind of have a smaller league in the state. I mean, it's really you and LeGrand most years. Tell me a little bit about when you're going to that LeGrand game, you know, a lot of coaches, they have a team or two that are kind of their rivals, and they're gearing up for those games. I mean, this year you guys beat LeGrand pretty bad initially, and they came back and beat you a couple times. So tell me a little bit about that. That mindset going into those rivalry games and, you know, that swing and score differential throughout the year, how that went and how you dealt with that.
Yeah, so playing LeGrand is always fun. I mentioned before I spent 10 years in LeGrand. I know most of these kids, most of their parents, just because I was living there for that amount of time. So the rivalry is deep. It's weird because I've been on both sides of it. And so still to this day, Baker parents and kids don't like LeGrand Baker parents and kids. And same thing with LeGrand. They don't like the people from Baker. And so the rivalry is heated. Like you mentioned, going into each and every game against LeGrand, there's no real pep talk that's going to motivate the guys just because they know what's at stake. And so the first time, we went over there and we beat them pretty good. I think that opened their the dudes from LeGrand eyes up a lot a bit. And so they came to our house, and they beat us pretty bad. They played harder than we did, and I think our guys took them for granted. And then the rubber match, the third game, was for the league championship, and they beat us by, I don't know, 14, 15, 16, something like that. They hit a lot of shots. We didn't. So it was a great rivalry. I've been known to coach Mark Carollo since he was in high school, and we're pretty good buddies off the court as well. So that brings a whole nother element to the ball game. Actually, his sister and my wife have the same name. We went to college together. So my wife's name is Amy, and we called Mark's sister Amy Jr. That's how far back we go. And so rivalry is deep. It's a fun rivalry, and I look forward to playing those guys every single time.
So when you play Coach Carollo one-on-one, who's winning that matchup?
Right now, probably him. But when he was in college and I was out of college a couple of years, I could beat him. If he would get past me, I just would foul him and tell him to check it up. So right now,
yeah.
Right now I'm not beating anybody. I could only probably beat my wife, maybe on a good day. Right now.
So when you're talking about, you know, team success and for the Baker Bulldogs, I mean, what would you say is going to be, you know, going into next year? You know, how do you define success for your team? Who, you know, probably. Went against a lot of odds. A lot of people probably wouldn't have picked you to make it to the state tournament. You made it there. I mean, you know, tuna barbecue, I've done it as a head coach. I know what it's like. It's not great when you probably could have won that first round game. I mean, obviously it was the second day against Philomath, you only lose by 7, but still you went 2 and out, you know? And so it's kind of that, oh, we made it, but there's that hunger for more. And, you know, in my instance, it was one of the most painful things, but it was like the building, you know, it was like the staircase to where we eventually got to. So, I mean, for you going into next year, I mean, what's the success for you?
Success is for these guys that are going to be on the team. I still don't know who's going to be on the team. That's the tricky part. There's a lot of kids who are fighting for roster spots, who are fighting for playing time, despite what happened this last year. So success for me as a coach, obviously I want to win the league title. Obviously I want to get to and win 3 games at the state tournament. But, you know, those are goals, but just the day-to-day goals, get better at the little things to make the big things a lot easier, such as play harder than the other team, practice every single day as hard as you can, don't leave anything on the court. And I think once all the guys on the team do that, I think the wins will take care of themselves.
So, and as we're talking about goals and expectations, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that have a lot of goals and expectations. It's coaches, it's assistants, it's players, it's parents, it's community members, it's people that, you know, are involved in the program. I mean, how do you, as a head coach of Baker, you know, it's got a really good tradition in all sports. How do you manage expectations? How do you keep your players focused on the goals at hand?
I just tell them that the guys who are there at practice every day are the ones they should be accountable to. I tell them that, and they know, they hear all kind of stuff about what they should be doing from their, you know, relatives, maybe teachers, maybe girlfriends or their buddies about what they should be doing. But in all reality, they're the only ones that practice going through the daily grind. And so just remind them to be accountable to each other, because, you know, being part of a program is a privilege, and they need to do the best job they can do to be accountable to the dudes they practice with every single day.
And so you guys, I mean, obviously I don't know how many guys – how many guys did you have on your varsity roster this year throughout the season?
We had 12.
So you got 12 guys, but obviously only five can play. And, you know, there's always going to be two or three that know that they're probably, they don't belong on the floor. And then there's going to maybe be a couple that maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't. But I mean, everybody has that situation where you've got these main, maybe five, six, seven players, maybe eight. And then you got these other guys. How do you create buy-in from your bench and your role players? And, you know, how do you get them to give their all, even though they're not kind of, you know, their role isn't being on the floor all the time?
That's a great question. This last year I had five seniors, and two or three of them didn't play as often as they probably wanted to. And we had conversations at the beginning of the year in regards to this is what the situation is going to be this year. Are you in or are you out? And they chose all to be in. And the reason why we were so successful as far as the chemistry-wise was because of those five seniors. They encouraged each other. They realized they weren't going to play as much as they probably thought they should have at the beginning of the year. But they bought in to the team atmosphere, and they are a big part in regards to why we were so successful winning games this year, just because they created a great, great atmosphere. Accepting the young kids coming on the team, not being envious, not being jealous, and just realizing, you know, everyone sacrificing for the good of the common team.
So you started to be the head coach at Baker in 2018, right?
Yes. Yep.
So you've put together a string of really good seasons since 2018. You know, you've had some 500, very close to 500, but you've been, I mean, fairly consistent. I mean, how do you, as the head coach at Baker, how do you maintain a winning culture like that?
I think it just revolves around the guys who are involved with the program. They want to be there. They work hard, and I think that goes back to the having practice at 5:30 in the morning. It's a big commitment to get there. And so if you're committed to getting there at 5:30 in the morning for practice, that means you're committed to the team. And so that kind of weeds out a lot of guys who don't want to be there, who may be there for their own selfish motives. But I think that consistency in regards to holding people accountable for being late to practice, for doing dumb stuff that takes away from the team. I think from me, just being consistent, you know, holding these kids accountable for their teammates, to their teammates. I don't play favorites. I treat all these young people like my own kids, and I hold them accountable, which is what kids need nowadays for sure.
Definitely. Well, thanks, Coach. We're going to take a break here, and when we return, we're going to let Coach Jones try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Eddie Townsend here with Coach Jabron Jones, head coach at Baker High School. Coach, for the next set of questions, I'm going to put you against the clock, something many coaches in Oregon believe should be implemented, the shot clock. We're going to have a couple minutes
indeed
to answer as many questions as possible, and we'll cover a variety of topics and should only need, you know, one, two, three-word answers. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Do you think Oregon should have a shot clock?
Yes.
How many seconds should the shot clock be?
35.
What is one change you would make to improve the game of basketball in Oregon?
Shot clock.
10 seconds to go. Up three. Do you foul?
Yes.
Down three, 12 seconds to go. You drawing up a play for a three, or are you trying to get to the rim for a two?
Get to the rim for a two, make the two. That's too many words.
No, you're good. I got it. You're on an island. You get one meal for the rest of your life delivered to you every morning. What are you eating?
Wow. Steak and potatoes.
Beach and sand or mountains and snow?
Oh, beach and sand.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Favorite NBA player?
Kobe.
Favorite college team?
Eastern Oregon University.
Favorite college coach?
Isaac Williams, Cal State Monterey.
Favorite? Wait, say that again. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, Isaac Williams, Cal State Monterey Bay.
Gotcha. What's your favorite NCAA Division I team?
Oh, we'll go Rock Jock Jayhawks, Kansas.
Ditto. What is your greatest basketball memory?
Being down 26 in college against Evergreen, second half, coming back and winning.
Wow. If you could pass one gem of wisdom onto your sons, what would it be?
Work hard.
Basketball goal number one for the next 5 years.
Get better every single day.
Well, Coach, I appreciate your time. That's going to do it for this episode of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We'd like to thank Coach DeRon Jones for joining us. If you follow up any questions or want to get a hold of Coach Jones, you can find his contact info in the episode description. Join us next time as we speak to other coaches in Oregon. Until then, coach them up.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Baker boys basketball coach DeRon Jones. Tune in next time as we interview the reigning boys basketball state championship coach from the Cascade Cougars, Calvin Mullen. Until next time, keep grinding.